This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. Big thanks to Amy for the news. She'll be back at 12 o'clock. And of course, before we go any further, a huge thank you to Jeff for another excellent edition of On The Record. He'll be back next Monday. But of course, you can catch On The Record every weekday here on RTR FM from 9 in the AM. As I said, this is the Indie Media Show. It's all about the news and views from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. And on this week's program, we're going to take a bit of a focus on, LGBTQI issues. It is coming up to Pride Week, so turning a spotlight onto those issues. We're going to be talking to Auntie Essa Montgomery, who is a longtime Aboriginal LGBTQI activist who's been working on bringing Pride to the Pilbara, wanting to bring Pride to the Pilbara in 2023. Joni Boyd had a chat to Auntie Essa just to talk a bit about some of the specific issues that face, particularly, Aboriginal folks who might be living out in places such as the Pilbara, especially people who are members of the LGBTQI community. So we're going to be hearing from Auntie Esther a little later in the show. We're also going to be talking about a bit of a controversial film festival, or entry into a film festival over East. Queer Palestinian activists and their supporters are calling for the Melbourne Queer Film Festival to remove an Israeli-funded film called The Swimmer under criticism that showing the film pinkwashes the Israeli apartheid. So a little later in the show, we're going to be hearing about that and catching up with Fahad from the campaign to remove the film from the festival. We're also going to be hearing from one of the folks from Blockade Australia. If you listened to last week's show, you would have heard from one of the activists there. They've been taking action for almost a couple of weeks, shutting down the Newcastle coal port. We're going to be chatting to Wilka, who's a custodian who's spent quite a bit of time over in WA, but he's from New South Wales and he's been involved in the campaign there. So we're going to get a bit of an update on what Blockade Australia have been doing in terms of their action for climate justice. Now, as I said at the top of the show, we're focusing a bit on LGBTQI issues this week, as it is Pride Week. And Auntie Essa Montgomery is a longtime Aboriginal LGBTQI activist who's working on bringing Pride to the Pilbara in 2023. Earlier in the week, Indie Media's Joni Boyd had a chat with her about being Aboriginal and queer out in the country, cops and corporations at Pride, among many other things. They started by chatting about Perth's upcoming Pride Parade being held at Gloucestershire Park, Gloucestershire Park Oval, rather than in Northbridge.
Yeah, for me it's a little bit weird rather than taking it to the streets. But look, if people are happy and, going to have a great night, good on them.
Yeah, they've said that people shouldn't wear stilettos. And it's like, come on, it's Pride. No stilettos.
Well, it's the same thing. They had it in. They had it at the Sydney Cricket Ground for Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. And people were like, what?
Yeah, it's like, where are you going?
And the drag queens, with their stilettos. But you'd be surprised. They managed to get around there.
Yeah, of course. Let's start by talking about Pride in the Pilbara, something that you're planning, trying to get funding for over the next couple of years for 2023, right?
Yeah, and it's only 17 months away. So
yeah.
That's actually not that far away. It will go very, very quickly, I imagine. And, when you're organising events, you go, 17 months, that's a long, long time away, but it's really not. When you're planning and you're fundraising for money and, you're trying to present yourself certainly to corporates and people to take an interest and, you're competing with about 50 other groups and individuals. So it's actually quite hard. And the fact that this is the first of its kind, the magnitude of the way we want to run it, Yeah, that's another thing. It's not though. It's not as if we're established. So a first off is sometimes quite difficult because people go, oh, well, you haven't done it before. So they're sometimes reluctant.
Yeah, so there hasn't really been anything like that up north. Like,
look, I think there's Pride. Pride's celebrated. It's celebrated in Port Hedland, and I actually went onto their page yesterday and was accepted onto their page. And they do tremendous work too. You know, people do these sorts of stuff, this sort of stuff as volunteers. A lot of the LGBT work is not paid work. You're very fortunate if you can get that gig.
But absolutely.
It's voluntary. And, look, they've got a great little page. They also have events. But this is going to be designed really for the Aboriginal community. So it's Aboriginal people for the Aboriginal community. And we won't exclude. It's everything. We have a youth yarning circle. We're going to have bands. We're going to have drag queens. Hopefully we've got some flying into Sydney.
Excellent.
And,
wicked.
Holding it at the Red Earth Art Precinct in Karratha and get the city of Karratha involved. And we've written to some of the trusts of the Aboriginal organisations, the language groups in the Pilbara to get some money out of them. It's trying to involve the entire community to celebrate, but also the backdrop is LGBT awareness, being accepted by families and community. Because it doesn't matter how out I am, it doesn't mean everybody else is the same as me. So this is what it's designed for.
Yeah, like how do you think it will benefit the community?
Well, you know, many of up in the Pilbara, we've got we put our young men through the law, and you know, customary law it is alive and well in the Pilbara. We also do that with our young women. Some of the families haven't been so supportive. We have some of our young people running away. They are living in Sydney and Brisbane. We don't want that. We want our families to talk about LGBT issues around sexuality and gender. And we want the families to, you know, come to a meeting place and have these robust conversations because our young people and some of our older people coming out shouldn't have to run away from the Pilbara. They should be able to be supported. It's also educating our Aboriginal health services to come on board. And overall, I think the language groups are extremely powerful in the Pilbara. And to have them acknowledge and recognise that there are LGBT people who are in the workplace, in Aboriginal organisations, and to be supportive of those people.
Yeah, how can some of the health organisations do better in terms of accepting LGBT folks in Aboriginal communities?
I think the first thing they've got to do is acknowledge that they do have staff that are LGBT. They yep. also have to talk about it from a board level because, you know, and I know you could have a CEO with the best intentions, but if the board, because the power's from the board, and if the board doesn't support awareness and education, then pretty much nothing gets done. So they could do a lot better. They really don't do a lot, to be honest. And
right.
So we need programs, we need funding, we need yarning circles, we need all that sort of stuff to be Aboriginal controlled for Aboriginal people in the Pilbara.
Yeah. So when it comes to transgender issues on that, like, are there any supports in these organisations for like transition?
Absolutely not. None at all. And often what happens is that we have some of our young people flee. They flee their families. They flee the Pilbara. They come south to Perth or they head east. And I think that's pretty sad to be loved and accepted when some of these people are from some of the largest Aboriginal families in Western Australia, that they feel that they're not accepted or they can't be their true selves. That they have to run away from the Pilbara. They should be able to be supported unconditionally by Aboriginal organisations in the Pilbara. And when I talk about the Pilbara, I mean like the key centres, which are Karratha, Roebourne, Newman and Port Hedland.
Yeah, what other kind of pride organisations and like events are you involved in up there?
I'm actually Perth-based, so I go backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
I was on the First Nations advisory for Sydney World Pride up until yesterday. I've stepped down. down because I'm working on this silver event, which will take up a lot of my time for the next 17 months.
Right.
I was heavily involved with advising, and I was a committee member for the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras and Sydney World Pride. But like I said, I stepped down officially yesterday.
Yeah, I wanted to chat a little bit about that. Like, what were some of the plans for Sydney World Pride? That sounds really exciting.
Look, it's really exciting. I think if you're under 45, you're going to have a wow of a time.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's a little bit, I don't like the look of it, to be honest. I think it's very youth-focused, and that's all very well, but they've got to understand that they're there where they are because of elders and senior elders in the LGBT.
Absolutely.
Whether you're Aboriginal or non-Aboriginal. And I think, like I said, and I have said over the last couple of weeks, I think if you're under 45, you're going to have a whale of a time. This is one of the issues. I don't think they really address ageing. I don't think the LGBTQ communities across Australia do it very well.
No, there isn't really much of a narrative for it, you know. Like, it's not something that comes into the imagination when we think about queer issues, you know.
No. And the only people who really raise it and run with it are people who are aging. You know, I'm 59 years of age. I was young once upon a time, so I get it. I understand it. But I think if you're going to have a global event, you have to be very inclusive of everybody. And it was interesting because I was in Interpride, who where they gave a license for their, you know, part and parcel with each other with the license with Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, because Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras actually hold the license to Sydney World Pride. And they had a youth and seniors workshop, and it was really, really interesting because there was a couple of young people, Shiloh and Finn, who were from San Diego, I think, who were talking about all the Pride events that they have in their particular city. It's all alcohol-based. And they said what needs to happen is it needs to be more youth events. They have a youth event where it's fenced off. There are absolutely no adults present. And they're trying to pull back on the alcohol. And I felt like interjecting and saying, well, gee, you don't want to come to Sydney, Australia, because that's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be held, a lot of the events are going to be held down on Gadigal land at the Domain. And it really has a youth focus. Yes, there's going to be stalls, there's going to be, you know, bands, there's going to be drag shows, but it is very youth focused. And I do think a lot of seniors and a lot of elders and senior elders in the LGBT community is going to be quite disappointed.
Yeah, I imagine that would be quite off-putting and disappointing, like you say, especially as someone who's been involved in these, you know, struggles for so long.
Well, I've been in this personally, myself, for 40 years, and I have seen a change. It has been a positive change, but ageing is an issue that needs to be discussed. Where exactly do elders and senior elders and ageing sit within the LGBTQ? And it's all very well to roll out the 78ers. The 78ers are not the only people who are ageing. There's a whole lot of people across Australia who identify as LGBTQ+. And I can just already see it. They're going to roll them out, do the publicity shots, and then push them aside. I can already see it. We'll see it.
Yeah, just so, like tokenised.
Yes. And here are our revolutionaries, you know, the 78ers. Here are our revolutionaries. And that's about it. The rest is all going to be for under 45. I think the program looks stunning of what I've seen and been able to have a look at. I think it's stunning. It's a stunning program, but it's very, very youth-focused.
Other problems that come with Pride that are being, you know, talked about in the community at the moment are like, you know, corporate influence at Pride and the cops being at Pride. Like, do corporations and the cops have like a big presence at Sydney World Pride?
I think, look, there's already conversations, there's already liaisoning behind the scenes. You've got a group in Sydney called Pride and Protest. And I do think that some of the stuff and statements that they make need to be supported. I've got a problem. First Nations, a number of years ago in 2018, we actually marched behind police. We had the police band, the police were present.
I don't believe that the police should march in uniform. I've got a major problem with that. I've had two siblings of mine, younger siblings, like two younger brothers, were murdered in prison. They are actually named in the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Death in Custody. So I do have a problem with the police marching and corrective services marching in uniform. But should police participate? Of course they should. Because I think once you start discriminating against and who can and who can't participate as an Aboriginal person or as an LGBT person, you need to take a good hard look at yourself. You can't exclude wholly the police. Wear a T-shirt saying police, in police uniform? No, because that uniform has been used to terrorise people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't support the police marching in uniform, but I do think police should have an opportunity to come to the table. Let's all talk about it. Let's all be adults here. And I think there are groups already, like I said, liaisoning about where do police fit in. And men and women who are in New South Wales Police Service, how they can participate during Sydney World Pride. And as for the corporate, I think you need to be realistic. Look, bills need to be paid. You've got to remember that everybody that works, most people who work behind Pride WA, who work for all these Pride events around Australia, including the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras and Sydney World Pride, are volunteers. And bills need to be paid. People need to be paid, like installation, carpenters, security, across the board, people need to be paid. So it's a really tricky one because I used to work for Woodside. I was their Aboriginal liaison officer, Aboriginal employment officer for a number of years. So I get how people don't want to align themselves with corporates, in particular mining companies, but you need to be realistic. Bills need to be paid.
Yep.
Money's got to come from somewhere. And it is a conversation I think that we need to talk about. Whether or not we accept funds and funding from mining companies and LNG companies who are doing destruction to, the environment, etc. I do think we need to, once again, we're all adults and have grown-up conversations around who funds Pride events and who doesn't.
Yeah, you're right. The money's got to come from somewhere. Just hopefully we can do Pride without doing propaganda as well.
Yeah, and the thing is also is that, there's a lot of rich gay and lesbian people, individual people who are just not putting into the community. So what happens? You've got organisers of Pride events actually approaching corporates for the money, So this is another issue. It's all very well to say, oh, the corporate shouldn't be involved, but you've got rich, you've got millionaires. You've got LGBT millionaires and they're just not putting money back into the community. So,
well said. Absolutely.
But what do? You approach the Woodside. You approach the Rio Tintos. I mean, Albert Kruger, who is the chief executive officer at the moment of the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras, is ex-mining. So I'm actually surprised more mining companies haven't, become involved in corporate. So you've got to be realistic. Bills need to be paid. Where do the Pride organisers get the money from?
So are you doing anything for this year's Pride Fest here in Perth?
No, I'm not, simply because we are working on Pilbara Rainbow. And like I said, it's going to be very, very big.
Yeah, I hope you get the funding together. I hope everything comes together. And, it sounds like it's going to be an excellent event.
I hope if you're not doing anything on, between the 24th, 25th and 26th of February 2023 and you're not going to Sydney, that, you come that way up into the Pilbara.
Yeah, personally, I'd much rather go up there than go over to Sydney.
Oh, bless. Yeah, good on you.
And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. Now, turning to, keeping with the subject of LGBTQI issues and turning to Melbourne, queer Palestinian activists and their supporters are calling for the Melbourne Queer Film Festival to remove an Israeli-funded film called The Swimmer under criticism that showing the film pinkwashes the Israeli apartheid. Indie Media's Joni Boyd chatted to Fahad from the campaign to remove the film from the festival. And Joni started by asking a little bit about the background to The Swimmer.
The Swimmer is a film by Adam Calderon, which is going ahead at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. And we have called for the festival to pull the film for receiving funding from the Israeli government. So the film is about a young swimmer who is involved in a competition to win a ticket to the Olympics. And the content really of the film isn't the issue that we have. So one of the responses we've received is, this is an important film about an important issue, homophobia in sport. How can you want that to be removed? But really, the issue that we do have is that by promoting and platforming films that are funded by the State of Israel, which has been found by Human Rights Watch this year to engage in the crime of apartheid, you're actually pinkwashing or glossing over the appalling human rights record of the State of Israel by painting it as some kind of fantastic liberal democracy. We think that's quite problematic. We also think that if you receive funding from the Israeli government as it continues to breach international law on a regular basis, then you should not have a place at a queer film festival due to it needing to be a safe space for, you know, queer Palestinian voices among queer First Nation voices. And unfortunately, we're not seeing that kind of prioritization of people who are more marginalized than the queer community.
Yeah, absolutely. So how have you pressured Melbourne Queer Film Festival over the past couple of months to pull the film?
So we've had some initial conversations with them about their programming. And we thought that they were going well. We thought that they were responsive to some of our concerns. When their programming was released and we noticed that the Swimmer was a part of the lineup, we had done some research and, you know, we'd realized that actually this film receives funding from the Israeli government. That's quite problematic. And so we had organized to meet with the board of the film festival to convey our concerns. This meeting was subsequently cancelled by the board. Without any real explanation. And that was quite a surprise to us because we thought, okay, here we're about to engage in some kind of, you know, reasonable advocacy. And, you know, all of a sudden they said, no, we're not talking to you. They did say if we wanted to talk to them, we could talk to them after the festival was done. But
That's not going to do much good, is it?
No, but we had already been given a date and they'd already agreed to meet. And, you know, to cancel this meeting without any real explanation seemed to indicate that they were quite happy to ignore our concerns. So what we did then was we organized an email campaign, getting people to email the board to relay their concerns. A number of filmmakers pulled their films in solidarity with us, and two members of the board also resigned, including the co-president. So we've been working quite hard to get MQFF to pay attention to us. Unfortunately, they seem determined not to engage. And, you know, really shamefully, it really does come across as a silencing of queer Palestinian perspectives. And, you know, as a gay Palestinian myself, I think that we deserve to be listened to in our own queer spaces.
Absolutely. Why do you think they suddenly pulled the plug on talking to you?
I honestly cannot say for sure.
Yep.
I think that, unfortunately, a lot of these spaces are very cis, white, gay spaces, and they kind of fall into that cis, white, gay hegemony. And the perspectives of people like me, but also people who are trans, people of color, First Nations, people who are queer from all of these diverse backgrounds often don't have a very large voice within the queer community. And I noticed that co-president Molly Whelan, in her resignation letter, she noted some concerns around transphobia at the festival as well. So there really is this big issue of not just Palestinian voices being silenced, but anyone who doesn't fit into that kind of mainstream gay identity. And that's not good enough, unfortunately.
Which is an identity that's, you know, actually quite a small fraction of the LGBTQIA community. So tell us about the action. You came to the screening with an attempt to prevent it?
Yeah, so there was an action held at the debut screening of the swimmer. And the action was not necessarily to prevent the screening from going ahead, but really to get some attention, make some noise, make it clear that we were here and we were going to be listened to and we wouldn't be silenced. So a number of people in the queer community, the Palestinian community, including our allies from the Jewish community as well, we all gathered to protest the screening of the film. And, you know, that was done in a, you know, pretty peaceful demonstration outside of the screening. It wasn't disruptive at all. And, you know, it was a really important thing for us to do to make ourselves visible and to say, well, actually, there is no pride in apartheid. And we cannot pretend that this is an apolitical setting when queer Palestinians like me actually can't access any kind of queer rights as long as the occupation of Palestine continues. So it's very much a queer issue, and we demand to be heard, and we won't settle for anything less.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for the campaign?
So the next steps are we are going to continue to pressure the board into, you know, adopting a policy of cultural boycott. So you cannot expect to have a queer film festival, which is inherently political, and not take into account some of the political considerations in terms of, you know, whose voices are prioritized, whose voices are marginalized. So that's really important. And you cannot also expect to run a festival that is a truly safe space when you are screening films that receive funding from a state that engages in apartheid. So that's what we're going to continue to do. Many of the filmmakers who have pulled out in solidarity with us, we're going to host a counter screening, and some details of that will be available shortly. But yeah, we're really looking forward to building this as a campaign with a lot more momentum, to make sure that we actually get some change for queer Palestinians within the community more broadly and into the future.
Absolutely. Power to you. So where can our listeners find more information or get involved?
To support the campaign, one of the biggest things you can do is to write a letter to the MQFF board, and you can do that by emailing program@mqff.com.au. On top of that, on social media, please use the hashtag MQFF4, that's number 4, apartheid. And yeah, get the message out there. We'd really appreciate your help.
Excellent. Thank you, Fahad.
Thank you very much.
Blockade Australia is a new group or a new campaign, a new movement, whatever you want to call it, that's aiming to really confront climate inaction and to put pressure on the Australian economy and our political elite to actually take action for climate justice. They've spent almost 2 weeks blockading the Newcastle coal port with tens of people arrested and many actions and quite successful actions at actually shutting down the coal port through direct action. A little earlier today, I caught up with one of those that has taken action, Wilka Kurikuta. He's originally from New South Wales, but has spent some time in Western Australia, and he's there taking action in his role as both an environmentalist, but also as a traditional custodian. And I started by asking Wilka exactly what's been happening over the last couple of weeks in Newcastle.
My name is Wilka Kurikuta. I was the first day action down at Newcastle. There's been 28 arrests so far, 20 actions, and it's been over 11 days. And we've made our point across at the moment, and yeah, we're pulling off until June. We've got another action date planned for June 27th to July 2nd. We're going to do Sydney. We've stopped the Newcastle coal port for 65 hours so far, so...
It's a pretty incredible effort, really. I mean, I guess for people, if they're not familiar already with Blockade Australia and with what's happening in Newcastle, why is it that the coal port has specifically been targeted for these series of actions?
Well, we're stopping all Australia's economy. We're just putting a stop to the economy for Australia, and we believe that's the best way to do it. That was the start of doing it, is by stopping Newcastle coal port.
someone such as yourself that has not only been involved in, you know, sort of environmental campaigns for some time, but, you know, also as a custodian, it's something that I guess you're really passionate about and caring for country and protecting country. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And is that part of your motivation for taking part in Blockade Australia?
My name, well, I'm Wilka Kurakuta. That's my traditional name from Bourke, New South Wales. It's Nyimba language. It stands for Tree Spirit Man. Like, that's a lot of my beliefs is standing up for country and just protecting country. And that's why I get up and do what I do, is just thinking about my kids' future as well. Like, I've got two kids. I've got a two-year-old and a one-year-old, and the future's not looking pretty bright for them. So that's why I'm standing up and making a stance, I suppose, is just to make a better future for my kids. Not just my kids, everybody else's kids, you know what I mean?
Now, the police response has been pretty intense, with the New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller saying that protesters may face jail sentences of up to 25 years. How do you respond to that threat of sending people to jail for 25 years just for taking direct action?
I reckon it's ridiculous. Like, because when I was the first person charged for Blockade Australia. I just reckon it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, we're out here trying to protect our future and protect everybody's future, you know what I mean? It's not just our future. We're looking out for everybody, and yeah, I just reckon it's ridiculous with what the police are trying to do with us, putting us in jail.
It's sort of a difficult situation, because I guess many people, they still feel as though they've got something left to lose, I think, when it comes to this sort of stuff, you know, in terms of climate change and you know, the destruction of our environment and our world. Do you feel like these kind of actions are inspiring more people to take action? Do you feel there's support in the community?
I believe so. Like, I believe a lot of people want to get involved now that they've seen what we do. And we're not putting anybody else's life at risk. It's the person that's doing the job, that's doing the action, that's putting their life at risk, you know what I mean?
And I guess, what do you think it is that stops people from, you know, you're someone who's been doing this for quite a while now, and, you know, you're willing to put yourself on the line and to actually, you know, to take the sort of the so-called risks around this. But, you know, what is it that stops other people from doing it? I mean, is it, like I said, that people think they've got something left to lose? Or
I think it's just a bit of scare tactics from the government. Like, that's what's scaring a lot of people away from doing what we do, you know what I mean, with direct action and everything. I think it's what the government's putting out there to stop us doing what we're doing, if you know what I mean.
So
they're trying to put these harsher penalties on us to stop us from going out and protesting and protecting. Not protesting, it's protecting. Like, I'm protecting the land. It's my cultural obligations being a First Nations man to protect the land. And that's just what I'm doing. And the government's out there trying to bring these new laws out and trying to throw us away in jail for 25 years. It's ridiculous.
Just finally, Wilka, you mentioned before that, you know, while you might have wrapped up things there in Newcastle for now, there is a big action coming up in June in Sydney. If people here in WA, you know, have watched what's happening of Blockade Australia and they're keen to get involved, or, you know, there's plenty of reasons over here, what's the best thing they can do?
We've just got hold of on our website. We've got blockadeaustralia.com. We've got Twitter. We've got Instagram. We've got Facebook. So just any one of them social media platforms, they can get a hold of us and send us a message, and yeah, we can get back to them.
And are you hopeful?
The more people, the merrier, you know what I mean? We need as much many people out there to help us as we can.
Totally. And, you know, you've spent a good deal of time here in WA, having been involved in other campaigns over here and having, you know, spent a lot of your life over here. Are you hopeful that people in Western Australia will start to take similar actions and, you know, get involved in the movement?
I can't put much out there at the moment, but I'm sure enough Blockade Australia will be coming across to the west side soon.
That was Wilka Kurakuta, who's involved in Blockade Australia, speaking to us a little earlier today. And that's about it for the Indie Media Show this week. We'll be back next week at 11 a.m. But of course, if you've enjoyed the program, you can always check it out at rtrfm.com.au.